Just a quick warning that today we're going to be talking about death, religion, fear, pain, lonely winds, drains, and, you know, existentialism, of course. So if you're not in the right headspace for that, maybe just skip these next few episodes. Everyone, welcome to yet another episode of A Hopeless Endeavor, Adriana Newsom Podcast. This is You Will Not Take My Heart Alive, Part 2, and I am Sam.
And I am Nikki. Hi. Thanks for joining us again for another, what we hope to be, riveting discussion. I don't fucking know what to say. Of You Will Not Take My Heart Alive. We love this song. We are intimidated by this song, but we're here for it. This is just like peak, in our opinion, I think, peak divers, peak Joanna. We're into it.
We are very into it. We would also hope that you are into it, but I don't think you would be here if you were not.
It'd be extremely weird if you were here and not into it. So thank you for being here.
Maybe we're also just background noise. That's fine if we're background noise.
Totally fine.
Listen to things constantly.
Yeah.
So hello from the background.
Hello from the background. Hello from the foreground. We hope that you do not sever all strings from us. We hope that you do not have icy lungs in your endeavor with us on this hopeless endeavor. Climb those rungs of light towards an understanding of what the fuck is happening in this song.
That's all we can hope.
Okay. Not by. Welcome.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Here it goes. Not by. Enjoy. I hope. Okay, bye. But not by.
Okay. Do we go to the next verse?
Sure.
It's a tricky one, maybe.
Yeah. Are you going to talk about Jacob's ladder? Because I'm ready
for it. Did you say you have research on that too?
Only because Melissa mentioned it. And yes. I was like, that's cool. Tell me more.
Literally exactly what happened to me too. Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. I can read the verse. Here we go.
Okay.
And she sings. Oh, and we start with a conjunction again. Okay. And how long did you climb that night with the ice in your lungs on the rungs of the light? Beyond recall, you severed all strings to everyone and everything.
Oh, boy.
This is why I kept saying string before too, because I loved this idea. I was really stuck yesterday when I was thinking about this as several strings as cutting ties, and like the visual of dying and like literally cutting your ties to the mortal world was so cool to me.
So fucking cool. It is so, I love that idea. The idea that we're bound here by strings is just like, oi.
Yes. And that you severed all strings. You did it. There's some control there. There's some like option. Not that I necessarily agree with that, but that like, ooh, that's cool.
Super cool. I also love that right away we get the theme of memory as being salient in both the first verse and in the second verse here. So what do you remember most is the first line of the song. And then again, memory. So beyond recall, you severed all strings. So like, beyond a place where you can remember, you severed all strings, which I don't even know. I don't know what that means exactly, but
yeah,
but we have it.
It makes me think of remember when we were talking about the Grim Reaper and the Grim Reaper's scythe and memory and how like the Grim Reaper walks up and is like, hey man, sorry, you're dead. Swoop. And like separates the mortal from the immortal. And that like, beyond recall to me is on like that non-remembering side of death. So like,
yeah.
I think we also talked about that swooping moment being the moment where everything's forgotten. And so like, okay, beyond recall is on the like living side of things, that as soon as we cross into death, it's like hitting the restart button. And if this is like a reincarnation thing, we start all over again and build new memories.
Oh yeah, that's super interesting. I love that idea. I love too the idea, like I don't know how to think of memory like as is put forth on this album, of memory after death in the place beyond the dawn or whatever. Because I think you could also, well, I don't know. This is just a thought. But like, there's also the idea that when you die, maybe you still have a memory until, like, maybe birth is the moment of forgetting, because like the birds seem to know stuff until they dove into the bodies, I think. But also maybe the moment of birth and the moment of death are not as separable as we're taking them to be right now. So I'm not sure.
I'm having some, what's the word when you've been here before? Déjà vu.
Déjà vu, yes.
Yeah, we've totally had this conversation before.
It does seem, real familiar. No, it means that we were on to something.
Maybe.
So David texted me as we were talking about this, which I think is just like very serendipitous timing. So I told him what song that we're recording on today. He didn't have a chance to go through it before we started recording because things have been busy with whatever, life, baby stuff, other stuff. But he just texted me, "Severed All Strings reminds me of Ariadne's thread." And he sent a link to the myth of Ariadne. So in Greek mythology, Ariadne was a Cretan princess and the daughter of King Minos of Crete. And so there are several variations of the myth, but she is known primarily for helping Theseus escape the Minotaur. And basically, from what my like little synopsis, I guess, of the myth is that she helps somebody escape a labyrinth by giving them a string to like carry with them through the labyrinth. And so they know like where they've already been and where they've come from. So it's like this guiding force. And if she's calling out that myth here with the severing all strings line, then we get the image of like, you've lost your, like you thought that you had this all mapped out, but like we cut that loose. And that might tie nicely into the themes of Rachel's thesis on like, look, the binaries that you thought you could rely on and that you like mapped your life with get fucking erased. Like,
yeah,
it's no longer a thing. You're a little lost.
Yeah. And I like the idea that like you show up to death being like, okay, my toolbox is full. Like I have a backpack full of memories. I have all of these like coping mechanisms ready. And then like the second you cross over, you have like your string to be like, okay, I'm going to like remember how I got here. And like the second that you swoop to the other side, it's like, no.
No, exactly. No.
Absolutely not.
Like, nice try.
Yeah.
Nice try.
Nice try. Exactly. Yeah. That's cool. Thank you, David, for linking that. I love Greek mythology. It's so fun.
It is so fun. I love any time we can make a connection between Jenna's work and Greek mythology. So about this ladder, Sam and I were both inspired to do some research about Jacob's ladder because of Melissa Marcherano's referencing it in the Delving into Divers article, which of course will always be linked in the show notes. So what did you find on Jacob's ladder, Sam?
Okay, so what I like about Jacob's ladder is that this, from what, and correct me if I'm wrong, from what I understand, it's the story of the guy, Jacob, who was sleeping and then had this dream of a ladder that extended to heaven, correct?
Yes.
And I think so. In this dream, I believe he sees angels. There's a few different versions of it. Hop over to the Wikipedia page. There's a bunch of like really interesting artworks of them.
And there's like angels going up and down from the ladder.
Yeah. And so I read in some places that like the angels were there to like bring up souls. So it's kind of like a welcoming committee of heaven. And in my brain, they're very much like, oh, like it's okay. Come with us. Like we'll help you up this like awful but beautiful ladder of death. This is just from the Wikipedia page. There's four interpretations of this ladder. So the first is that the angels represent souls descending to and ascending from bodies. Some consider this to be Philo's clearest reference to the doctrine of reincarnation.
Right. So yeah, these are Philo's interpretations of it, right? The four.
Yes. The Hellenistic Jewish philosopher Philo, born in Alexandria, presents his allegorical interpretation of the ladder in the first book of his De Somnis.
Okay.
So the first one is that the angels up and down.
That first interpretation, I think, is amazing. Like, so in line with some of the shit we've been talking about. Reincarnation, ascension and descension, souls leaving bodies. Fucking cool.
Yes. Very cool. The artwork. One of these paintings is one. It's the one by William Blake of Jacob's Dream. I have come across this while looking for album art so many times that when I saw it here, I was like, I didn't even know what this was about. But the fact that, like, the algorithm knew that I wanted to see it, I was like, okay.
Oh, that's cool. Really cool.
Okay, guys.
Yeah, David just read a book on William Blake, and like, it is so fucking fascinating. His life was so interesting. He had like really weird religious views, but like weirdly grounded in nature. But I don't know. I'm looking at that painting that you referenced, and it is beautiful. It is so cool.
It is. And I think I probably came across it when we were doing Sawdust and Diamonds.
Oh, yes. Did you see that comment? Now I forget where it was. Oh, no, I remember now. It was on my post announcing that we weren't going to have an episode last week, where someone was like, the album art is my favorite, like one of my favorite parts of the entire podcast. And I was like, people give entire credit to Sam. She spends so long finding like the perfect piece of artwork for every episode. And so, yeah, I just wanted to highlight your amazing work there.
It's a very fun task to do.
Okay, so I'm sorry, I interrupted. Back to the interpretations from Hellenistic Jewish philosopher Philo.
Okay, so first one, angels are souls, up and down the ladder, reincarnation. Second one, the ladder is the human souls, and the angels are God's, I don't know if it's Lagoi or Lajoy, pulling the soul up in distress and descending in compassion. So the ladder itself is the human soul, and the angels that Jacob saw in his dream are pulling the soul, so are descending in compassion and then bringing the soul up in distress.
Yeah, cool. I just looked up the definition of Lagoi or whatever, Lajoy. And it just says, in Greek philosophy, it's the rational principle that governs and develops the universe. Crazy. Who knows? I don't know the reason or logic of existence. Who knows what that could be? But on this interpretation, it could be the angels could be God's Lagoi, his like reasons.
Okay. I just don't know what to do with that.
Me either. I know. Me either.
The third view is that the dream depicts, so the dream that Jacob had of the ladder is that, the dream depicts the ups and downs of the life of the practicer. So the descending and ascending of the ladder is just like virtue and sin. It's just like how you lived your life, I guess.
Like this metaphorical ascension and descension.
And then the last view is that the angels represent the continually changing affairs of men. And I'm not really sure what to do with that.
Yeah, me either. That's like a very broad, non-specific. That was Philo trying to be like non-committal, being like, look, there are lots of interpretations by which I'd be right if I just say this very vague thing.
Yeah, so I'm not sure what to do about that one. Okay, somehow in my Googling here, I also got to Elysium. So I was like in Jacob's Ladder, internet searching land, but also Greek mythology land. And I was like, okay, let's think a little bit about like what death is like in Greek mythology. So there's like these steps in ancient Greece to get to the underworld, which I know we've talked about before. So the first one is Thantanos, the god of death, reaches down and cuts a lock of hair from your head. Then Hermes, the messenger of the gods, leads you to the river Styx. If your body was buried, then Charon, the ferryman, transported you across the river. And then I know we've talked about Cerberus.
The doggy.
The doggy. Yeah. On the bank of the river, you encountered the three-headed dog who guarded the underworld, who his job was to stop people from leaving and returning. After crossing the river, you would leave the ferry, and it's a very involved process. You walked to a place called the Asphodel Fields, where people forget all memories of their former life. Ooh. And then at a fork in the road, three judges decide where to send souls. So you either go, good people were allowed to go onwards to Elysium, which is a comfortable place where the sun always shone. So three judges decide where to send souls. So you have a fork, you have the good people going to Elysium, and then those who needed to be punished were sent to Tartarus. And Tartarus, yeah, people who had upset the gods would receive terrible punishments. Tartarus was a dark place, imagined to be as far below the earth as earth is from the sky. Greek mythology tells the story of people who ended up in Tartarus, like our good old friend Sisyphus. So then I was like, Elysium, that sounds like a pretty nice place to be. So in Homer's Odyssey, he describes Elysium as a paradise. Nikki, this is jumping ahead a little bit, but I'm going to do it anyway. Elysium is described as a paradise where life is easiest for men. No snow is there, nor heavy storm, nor ever rain, but ever only does the ocean send up blasts of the shrill blowing west wind that they may ever give cooling to men. I know.
Are you thinking about the martial wind and clarion rain?
I'm thinking about wincing in pain.
In wincing in pain. Yeah, I love that. I love that connection.
So, we're jumping ahead to that verse, but I think to me that meant that our narrator here is not going to Elysium because there is none of this in Elysium.
Right. So our narrator is going to one of the worst places?
I don't want to say that.
I mean, maybe instead of it being one of like the two other options of Greek mythology, that it's like, look, there's no heaven or there's no Elysium. And so maybe it's just like this very earthly, the earth hurts. It hurts to be here. So there doesn't need to be any like, you know, separate hell or separate whatever, like torturous place. It's just that like here on earth living is painful.
Yeah. The earth hurts is a truth if I've ever heard one.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, cool. I love that little tangent. That's cool. Really, really cool.
Yeah, I'm glad you think so. What else do we need to know about Jacob's Ladder? But the thing that annoys me about it is that it was a dream, you know?
But we're like in the fucking Bible, I shouldn't say fucking Bible. In the Bible, there's a bunch of like prophecies come to people through dreams. So we're supposed to rely on them more than just, you know, more than we would rely on them in everyday life in regular world. Is that what you mean by your skepticism of it being a dream?
Yeah, I guess I just wanted it to be more rooted in fact. But like, what is fact if we're talking about this anyway? But then I also think the dream, that it is a dream, is interesting only because we've talked about like awakeness throughout her music a lot. And like, if we are in the process of dying, if this is what's happening in this song, how awake are we? How conscious are we? Like, what... Yeah. What's going on? I don't know.
Well, yeah. And I mean, like, if this is a song about death, then like, yes, how do we interpret that transcendent state of mind? Is it one of being alive or dead, or awake or or like conscious or unconscious, awake or asleep? One of the things that maybe ties into that is that one of the interpretations I'd seen of Jacob's Ladder, squarely a Christian interpretation, was some theorists associating the ladder with Christ. So Jesus as being this like metaphorical ladder, in that he bridges the gap between heaven and earth. So in another, if this is on the right track here, another symbol, maybe the ladder being another symbol of this blurring of the binary, of this bridging of the two things that we thought were opposites of one another, heaven and earth, and it being bridged by this ladder between the two. So making everything a lot more fluid and less distinct than it had initially seemed, maybe. You don't like it?
No, I do like it. I do really like it. I don't know.
I mean, who the fuck knows with any of this? These are ridiculously challenging concepts to even think about in the first place. So who knows? I really do love the idea of the rungs on this ladder being rungs of light.
Yes.
Because it like, there's something, and I can't quite place my finger like coherently on what gives me this vibe, but it gives me kind of a Waltz of the 101st Lightborn vibe where there's like, I guess, traveling via light.
Yep.
And so this is like another way of traveling via light, whereas in Waltz we saw they're like time traveling, zooshing in spaceships or whatever at the speed of light, and that maybe allowing for multi-universal travel or maybe time travel. But here there's like ascending via light in a way. The rungs of the light, I think, is just, it's just a beautiful image.
It is. And linked to the Wikipedia page for Jacob's Ladder is this link for like a really, you know, like if someone is like, God is emerging from the clouds, you know, that like very particular kind of ray of light.
Yeah.
So they're called, I'm going to say this one, crepuscular rays. Okay. So it's rays that are sunbeams that originate when the sun is just below the horizon. And it's those like very, in my mind, the very like, kind of rays. So I'm imagining that this is what the rungs are made of. But this is also just like, this is a brutal description of climbing the ladder, right? Like we have ice in our lungs and we're climbing for a long time, I'm assuming. And we're climbing in this like, what, like dark, cold space? We're all by ourselves.
Right. Totally. It is. I think that is such an important point to bring out here, Sam, that like, this is not a hunky-dory description of like a warm light of God zooming us up. Like,
it's not hunky-dory.
No.
They took our backpack of supplies, they took our string, and now we're climbing this freezing ladder in the dark. I'm assuming it's in the dark, but that the light, this is my vision, that there's like just enough light so we can see where the next step is.
Yeah. It in a similar way, so we talked about the poem that you read, and it gives me a little bit of the same vibe where it, rather than it being this like really magical, warm, religious, heavenly experience, that this description seems to me to be a little bit more grounded in nature and like more grounded in the like cold and uncaringness that is not just Earth, but like that is the universe, right? That is this like very natural scientific interpretation. And so the higher you get up into the sky, instead of it being this warm, welcoming, you know, heaven or what was the Greek thing called? Elysium or something? Elysium. Rather than it being that, it's just this, it's still just nature. It's still just like space is fucking cold, man. As you're going to get higher up into the galaxy, it's cold and yeah, I don't know, uncaring in a way that I really like and that feeds into the existential dread of this song, I think.
Yes. Yeah, it does fit in perfectly to that. So not only are you like enduring this transition, they've taken our tools, they've severed all strings, you're alone. Like it's really quite awful.
It is it really quite sound awful. Great. And I just love it as the framing of the question, how long did you climb that night? So like it makes it seem like the narrator who's asking this question, who I still don't really understand who it is, but like whoever's asking this question is like, wow, man, you were climbing a long time that night. Like, why are they surprised or why do they not know how long they had to climb? Like it's a painful endeavor to transition from one plane of existence to the other.
Yeah.
Is the vibe I'm getting.
Yes. Yes, I like it. I mean, I don't like it. It sounds awful. I'm not going to volunteer to do it, but it doesn't sound great.
No. The ice in your lungs, too, not only gives the vibe of like it being cold and unwelcoming, but also like just this like very anxious on the brink of death, like it, I can't breathe vibe, you know, like this scary, restricted breath, kind of like existing outside in Winnipeg
in winter. I just googled ice lungs and the first things that come up is King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard's album Ice, Death, Planets, Lungs, Mushrooms, and Lava, and I was like, yes, okay, but that's not what
King Giz not the direction not. I was looking for.
No.
I think it was Melissa in the Blessing All the Birds article, the Delving into Divers one, that mentioned that the idea of severing all strings between the between the person to whom the narrator is speaking and everyone and everything, that severing of strings is sort of setting the stage for this fear that like hounds the author, or sorry, the narrator, I should say, this like perception that what death means is that I will no longer have this attachment to everyone and everything that I've ever cared about. Like it's just bringing to the forefront this this view of death, which Melissa had pointed out in the article, might speak to the idea that there is no afterlife, because like if there were an afterlife, maybe we'd still have some attachments, you know, you'd be like waiting for your loved ones when you die. But again, this being like a colder interpretation of that might mean that there's some, I don't want to say finality in death, because that's not the word I'm looking for in the context of divers. But there's some, it's a true ending. At least in one sense, I don't know.
Yeah, that there's a conclusion there. There's a clear division at the very least between life and death.
Right. Right. Yeah, exactly. That's a good way of putting it, actually. And I hadn't thought of this until now, but like in order for the cyclical view of life and death to work, and in order for like that view of existence to work, and correct me if I'm wrong here, I think it has to be the case that there is no afterlife, right? Because if there were an afterlife, then how is my spirit or soul or whatever going to go on to live another existence while simultaneously being in heaven. Like, I think it necessitates the denial of the traditionally, like, the Christian or the Judeo-Christian version of, like, what an afterlife might look like. I'm pretty sure it's the rejection of that, right?
I think that makes sense to me, that it's, like, contrasting with reincarnation.
Yeah, right? Because how are you going to be reincarnated if you're living an afterlife?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good question. I don't know, but that makes sense to me.
Yeah. Like, if that's right, then there's, like, this kind of beautiful, like, paradox almost that happens between the idea of, like, heaven being posited as this way that you can live forever, but living forever, like, in heaven is exactly what prevents you from living forever in the form of cyclical, like, reliving. And that's kind of cool.
It is cool.
So I think that is all I have for this verse. Do you have other stuff?
I don't think so. We talked about, I mean, considering how much we've talked about time in this album, that we're asking how long did you climb that night is kind of a hilarious question. Because, like, in this process of life to death, do we have any real concept of time?
Right. And, like, why does it matter exactly? Like, what is the length?
Yeah. Yeah. What is the length? And, like, does that mean that the length of this ladder, like, that the length, the time of transition is different for different people?
Right, right. Yeah, exactly.
And I obviously don't have an answer to that, but, like,
Like, I think so far in this song, I've been thinking of the narrator, the person asking these questions, as someone who knows more than the dying person.
Yes, someone who has gone through this experience already, right? And is, like, comparing, or almost comparing notes.
Right. But now, and, like, that totally might be right, but at least now it's being called into question for me, because, like, maybe it's also just, like, depending on who the fuck this narrator is, maybe it's someone being like, I genuinely don't know, like, how long do you have to climb for with the ice in your lungs on the rungs of the light? Like, what is that like? And, like, what do you remember most? Because, like, I don't know. I'm just an alive person still. Or maybe someone who hasn't been alive. Who knows?
Yeah. So that's an interesting change in perspective then too, right? Is it someone who has already done this and is just looking to compare experiences? Or are we looking for advice as someone who's still alive? Are we asking, like, these big existential questions to the universe and hoping that we get an answer from someone who's already passed?
Right. And you know what, too, if we think back to what we said at the beginning of this recording session on Rachel's interpretation of the narrators of the song, then we might have the first verse, which is focused on remembrance. So what do you remember most? The line of the sea, blah, blah, blah. That might be the body speaking to the mind. So remembrance being something that the mind does. And maybe this next verse is the mind speaking to the body. So it also starts with an and. And then it's asking, like, body, how long did you climb that night with this ice in your lungs? It's like a very corporal thing. It's this very bodied, these bodied questions.
Yeah.
And it's beyond recall, because bodies don't remember maybe in the same way. Or I don't know. That's too literal.
That's cool.
Yeah, maybe. And then it's the body that is severed from everyone and everything rather than
the Nikki, mind. That's cool. Yes.
It's a thought. I don't know how much I subscribe to it yet, but it's a thought.
I like it. I like the idea that, like, the body is doing this, like, task of endurance while the mind is elsewhere. But that separation has happened and that, like, we can't remember because we weren't really there.
Right, exactly.
Like, the soul wasn't really there. It's just, like, this motion. Ugh, it's kind of creepy. But I like it. It is
creepy. Very creepy. Beyond recall, you severed all strings. Yeah, and so I guess on this interpretation, well, actually, no. I was going to say on this interpretation, then I guess we have the death of the body and the survival of the mind. But I actually think that Rachel would want to push back on that interpretation, as she thought it was the erasing of binaries. So like erasing the idea that that these things are separable in the first place. I don't know. Crazy questions to keep in mind as we trudge through the rest of the song.
Okay, everyone. That was part two of You Will Not Take My Heart Alive. If you noticed, we only got to the end of the second verse. So there's many verses to go. Actually, not that many. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Really not that many at all.
Really not that many. It's a pretty short song. But as we said, this is a sandwich of songs, a very existential, delicious, awful sandwich. we are on the internet in many, many places. So if you haven't joined us in those places, please do. I do Instagram things, so I'm going to say that one first. I would love if you followed us and sent us DMs on Instagram, which is Hopeless Endeavor Podcast. You can also join us on Facebook, which is... You know what? I looked at that. Yep.
A Journeyson Podcast.
Thank you. I looked at the bingo card. Remember when that lovely person yes. made a bingo card for our episodes? I looked at that yesterday because I was searching the Facebook, and one of the bingo cards was forget the name of the Instagram handle. So in my mind, I just stamped that card with my bingo never.
It's confusing, okay, guys? I don't know. It's hard to keep track of very similar names for slightly different things when you're as not into that as Sam and I are. Anyway, that bingo card was so sweet.
It was so sweet. That's one of my very favorite things that has ever happened.
Yeah, that was amazing.
Hopelessendeavor@gmail.com.
Yes, hopelessendeavor@gmail.com. We have a...
You know what it is. We say it every week.
We have a Patreon. You should check out early episode releases and bonus series there. It is linked in the show notes, but also it's just patreon.com/hopelessendeavor. What is that? All our things? I think that's all our things. I'm trying to get the Twitter. Oh, no, I'm not currently trying. I'm trying to try to get the Twitter reactivated because David thinks that we should be doing Twitter stuff, but I haven't actually started the process of trying. So I'm trying to try.
The extent of Twitter that I'm willing to commit to is posting a song lyric. So, and maybe like alerts for episodes.
Yeah. Exactly.
What do you think? I guess this is a conversation that we need to have.
Yeah, you guys don't necessarily need to be privy to it, but I don't know. Watch out for in the future. Maybe, maybe not. We'll tell you. All right. Anyways, thank you for being here. We will be back next week with part three of You Will Not Take My Heart Alive, and we hope you guys have a lovely week. Until then, bye.
Yes. Take good care. Thank you for being here. Goodbye.